enormous eye, dominating the top half of his face, stared at me across the yard. Hakaemono stirred. Not a child. Not even human. A yokai, but one that wasn't particularly threatening. I sensed the demon's disappointment. If the yokai wasn't menacing, there was no reason to fight. But at the same time, I couldn't ignore a strange yokai that had appeared out of nowhere, especially when, sitting on a stump at the edge of the woodpile, it was obviously waiting for me.
Konbanwa, Kage-san,
the yokai greeted and bowed as I approached. That single bright eye continued to watch me from beneath the brim of his hat.
Isn't it a nice evening?
Who are you?
The one-eyed boy cringed at my flat tone. Leaning back, he reached into his robe and drew out a small lacquered box. Pulling off the lid revealed a white, squarish lump of tofu resting inside, and he held the box to me in both claws.
A gift, he announced with another bow. Or a peace offering, to show I mean no harm. I am an insignificant nothing, an unimportant speck, not worth the great Kage Demon Slayer's time. So please, do not have Kamigoroshi cut off my head.
Hakaemono scoffed in wordless disgust. Apparently, it did not believe this yokai to be worth killing.
If you truly mean no harm, you have nothing to fear from me, I told the creature, ignoring the offered tofu. But you waited until I was alone to show yourself, so I assume you're here for a reason. What do you want?
Kage-san is truly merciful.
The yokai sat up, and a fat red tongue slithered between his lips, curled around the tofu, and slurped it into his mouth. Wiping his mouth on his sleeve, he regarded me with that single huge eye that didn't hold an ounce of childlike innocence.
My master sent me here with a message for the great Kage Demon Slayer, the yokai stated. He knows what it is you seek, and he warns that Kage-san should be careful, for there are others searching for it as well. Thieves, mystics, and daimyo alike. Many have heard the legend of the dragon's prayer and are scouring the land for the pieces of the scroll.
The dragon's prayer? Was that what Lady Hancho had sent me for? I knew the scroll had to be important. If the daimyo of the Shadow Clan had sent me to retrieve it, then she was expecting trouble of the supernatural variety. Running into a horde of Amanjaku near the temple had confirmed that suspicion, but that didn't tell me anything about the scroll itself. Dragon's prayer, I thought. An ancient relic of immense power? A priceless scripture lost to the ages? I wondered what it really was, and why someone had sent a horde of lesser demons, and, according to Yumeko, an oni, the most powerful of Jigoku's terrors, to acquire it. Though it wasn't my place to wonder. My mission was to retrieve the scroll, no matter what it was, no matter who was searching for it.
Heed my master's warning, Kage-san,
the yokai went on, becoming somber.
Most mortals searching for the dragon's prayer don't know enough to pose a threat. They have heard a bit of the legend, perhaps enough to try to gather the pieces of the scroll, but their knowledge is incomplete. They flail blindly in the dark, ignorant and unaware. But there is one that even the Kage Demon Slayer should be wary of. Someone that rivals even the power of Kamigoroshi.
He cast a glance at my sword, as if afraid to offend it, before lowering his voice to a near whisper.
Long ago, there was a being that was a curse upon the pages of Iwagoto's history. His name inspires fear and loathing, even now. The one responsible for such hate has been called many things throughout the ages, but most remember him as Genno, the master of demons.
I straightened, and Hakaemono perked as well. Both of us recognized that name. The master of demons was a well-known, if terrifying, figure from the country's darkest era. 400 years ago, in the midst of the worst civil war the land had ever known,
A sorcerer named Gen-No raised an army of demons and undead to assault the capital and overthrow the emperor. Because the land was so fractured, his strategy nearly worked. The emperor was killed, and the imperial city was on the verge of collapse when the clans finally put aside their squabbles and united against the greater threat. Many lives were lost, and the country was nearly torn asunder, but the combined strength of the clans was enough to finally turn the tide. In the final battle, Gen-No was slain, the hordes of undead crumbled, and the demons fled, scattering to the winds. But that was not the end of the story. Not content with simply killing the master of demons, the new emperor had him beheaded, his body cremated, and his head sealed deep within a sacred tomb so that he would never again rise to threaten the land. That was the theory, anyway. I faced the yokai and frowned, making him shrink back. "The master of demons was killed over 400 years ago," I said slowly, making certain I understood what the one-eyed creature was implying. "I take it he's returned somehow?" The yokai bobbed his head.
"That is what my master believes," he said. "The wind witch that attacked you earlier was one of his servants. Gen-no-sama's, not my master's. My master would not bother with one such as she."
His eyes scrunched up as if he were disgusted by the thought before he shook his head.
"But Gen-no has many demons, yokai, and even humans that do his bidding. And now that he is looking for the scroll, he'll try to eliminate any competition. That means you, Demon Slayer, and any who are close to you."
I thought of Yumiko, her bright gaze and cheerful smile, the light going out of her eyes as a demon ripped her apart. Strangely, it bothered me in a way I'd never felt before.
"Why are you telling me this?" I asked the yokai. "If the scroll is so powerful, why doesn't your master want it as well?"
"I don't question the master's orders," the one-eyed creature said, going a bit pale at the very thought. "My only purpose is to serve him in whatever way I can. He told me to warn the Kage Demon Slayer that the master of demons is searching for the dragon's prayer and that he plans to kill you. So I have. And now my job is done."
He blinked his enormous eye and gave me a nervous look.
I can go now, yes? You won't try to kill me once I try to leave?"
The demon in my head gave me a push to do just that, cut the pathetic creature down when its back was turned, a fitting end to such weakness. I stifled the urge and jerked my head toward the tree line.
"Go,"
I told the yokai, who immediately leaped off the woodpile without turning his back on me, I noticed.
"But tell your master this. Don't get in my way. If he threatens me or those who travel with me, I'll kill him. That is my only warning. If we meet on the road as enemies, I won't hesitate to cut him down."
The yokai's eye widened until it resembled a tiny moon, and he nodded.
Of course, Kage-san, he stammered, bobbing as he backed away. "I'll be sure to deliver your message."
He stole a glance toward the trees, and I was suddenly certain that this master was close, and that he had heard the entire conversation.
"Well then,"
the yokai finished, preparing to dart into the woods.
"Have a good night, Kage-san. Hopefully we will not meet again."
He darted away, a streak of pale skin in the moonlight, and vanished into the shadows of the forest. I sensed Hakaemono's vague disgust that I hadn't severed his spine and ignored it, scanning the darkness beyond the trees. Something was out there. The mysterious master who'd made certain to warn me that Gen-no the sorcerer had returned to Ningenkai hadn't done so out of any sense of altruism. Whoever he was another player in this game I often found myself in. Lady Hansho, the Emperor, the clan daimyos, they were the generals, the major players, the ones with perfect knowledge, and we were the pieces on the board. I was a single pawn in a shogi match, being moved by unseen forces,
going where I was directed without any knowledge as to why. That was how it had always been. And now, it seemed another general had stepped up to the table. Genno, the master of demons, had returned, and would likely be seeking revenge. Lady Hansho would want to know about this, as would the rest of the daimyos, and even the emperor himself, but my first duty was to my own clan. As soon as I secured the scroll, I would return and tell her what I had learned, or perhaps pass the information along to Jomei or another servant of the Shadow Clan if they popped up to check on me. Until then, I would continue my mission and worry about demons when they came. I turned and walked back to the hut, feeling eyes on me the entire way. When I peered through the doorframe, the Ronin was sitting alone in the center of the room, surrounded by debris and empty bottles. Yumiko lay on a blanket in the corner, clutching a straw pillow, an overturned sake cup lying forgotten beside her. The Ronin saw where I was looking and sighed, shaking his head.
"Half a bottle, and she was nodding off into her cup," he said,
a rueful grin stretching his mouth.
"Pity, really. I was hoping she might be a handsy drunk. Guess I'll be drinking alone tonight. Unless you'd like to join me, Kage-san."
"No." Taking kamigoroshi from my belt, I sat in the doorway and leaned against the frame, positioning my body so that it stretched across the entrance. If yokai were still out there and wanted to get into the hut, they would have to get past me, at least.
"Making me pour my own sake. How crass!"
The Ronin sniffed, poured himself a cup, and then took a swig directly from the bottle.
"Good thing dogs like me aren't expected to have manners or any kind of social graces. So, Kage-san."
He picked up the sake cup with his other hand and eyed me over the rim with a shrewd black gaze.
"What's the story with you and Yumiko? You're part of the Shadow Clan, and you're not a Ronin, so why are you following a peasant girl all the way to the capital? She's not a servant, I can tell that much. No clan member would let a servant girl boss them around like that."
He tipped the contents of the cup into his mouth and swallowed, then grinned at me.
"Or maybe she's really a princess dressed as a peasant to avoid detection, and you're her bodyguard. That would explain a few things. How she can order you around, how you concede to everything she says, even helping a random bandit on the road."
He paused, and when I didn't answer, the grin grew wider.
"You know, if you don't say anything, Kage-san, I'm only going to assume the worst."
I leaned my head against the doorframe, letting his babble slide over me like water, vanishing like mist as it passed. "Your assumptions mean nothing to me," I said, making him snort.
"Presume what you like." "Oh? Then I suppose you wouldn't mind if I have a little fun with the peasant girl?"
The Ronin put down the bottle and cast a hungry look in the corner, eyes gleaming.
"She has a nice body under those rags, and I'd bet my last gold ryu that she's unspoiled. You weren't going to do anything with her, right, Kage-san? She is just a peasant, after all."
He stopped, his gaze falling to my sword, where I had curled my fingers around the hilt. My body had gone very still, ready to explode into movement, and there was a new emotion boiling just below the surface, one I hadn't felt before. Similar to Hakaemono's violence and bloodlust, but different. It took me a moment to place it, because the feeling in my chest wasn't the demon's emotion. For the first time in years, it was my own. Anger.
"Ah!"
The Ronin smirked and picked up the sake bottle.
"That's what I thought. Relax, Kage-san. I'm not in the habit of sleeping with random peasant girls, especially if they have a killer bodyguard nearby who is all too willing to cut off my head."
He poured the last of the contents into the sake cup and frowned when only a trickle came out.
"Kss! That's unfortunate. I'm not nearly drunk enough. Well, only one thing to do.
He tossed back the last of the liquor, then picked up the bottle and rose, swaying a bit as he stood up.
Noboru, you bastard. I know you had a secret stash hidden somewhere.
He started to stagger away, but paused and glanced at me, that wolfish grin crossing his face again.
You know, he announced, if you're heading to the capital, I think I'll come with you for a bit. The roads around here are dangerous. Bandits and all sorts of lowlifes assaulting honest travelers. I'll travel with you. Make it a little less perilous. You can be the bodyguard. I'll be the guard dog. Safety in numbers and all that, right?
He chuckled, fully realizing the irony, and glanced at the corner where the girl still slept, dead to the world.
You don't think Yumiko will mind, do you? No matter. I'll ask her tomorrow when she wakes up. Now,
he turned and staggered toward the back of the hut, toward a separate room.
Where's that sake, Noboru?
He muttered.
Don't think you can keep it from me. I can sniff out liquor wherever it's hiding.
I listened to the sounds of rummaging and the occasional grunt or profanity. After a few minutes, there was an exclamation of triumph, and then nothing could be heard but the soft clinking of bottles. Eventually, even those stopped, and a guttural snore came from the corner room. I drew Kamigoroshi into my lap and waited for sunrise, planning to wake Yumiko the moment the light touched the horizon. With any luck, by the time the ronin roused from his sake-induced hangover, we would be long gone. Because if he did follow us, I might have to break my promise to Yumiko and kill him.
17. Hospitality.
Mabushii,
I muttered, shielding my face as blinding beams of light cut through the pine branches and stabbed me between the eyes.
So bright. Why is the sun so bright today? And if someone could please tell the birds to stop singing so loud, I would appreciate it.
Tatsumi, walking a few paces ahead, did not seem at all affected by the mysterious increase in light or noise this morning. He didn't say anything, but I could sense he was secretly amused.
I can hear you laughing, Tatsumi, I warned, scowling at him. Does my misery entertain you?
He didn't answer, and I groaned, rubbing my eyes to ease the pounding behind them.
I've never been sick a day in my life, I muttered. I don't understand why I'm ill now.
You've yet to build up a tolerance for alcohol. Tatsumi cast a glance at me over his shoulder. Sake can be very strong for the uninitiated. Unfortunately, this is one of the side effects.
This is normal?
I thought back to the previous night, what I could remember of it. The strange, strong drink Okame kept pouring into my cup had burned as it went down, then seemed to light a pleasant warmth in my stomach. I remembered feeling drowsy and strangely lightheaded, and then I couldn't recall anything after that.
It's like a troop of monkeys are screaming and throwing pine cones against the back of my eyes, I groaned. Why do people even drink sake if they feel like this in the morning? Do you think Okame-san feels the same? Can't remember half of what we were talking about.
A chill ran up my spine. I couldn't remember anything of what was said last night. What else had I forgotten? Or done? What if I had revealed something I shouldn't have, like what I truly was? If I'd slipped up, if Tatsumi found out that I was Kitsune... I shivered in the bright sunlight. I had to be more careful. The Demon Slayer might tolerate a human girl leading him to the Dragon's Prayer, but definitely not a yokai. If he discovered I had tricked him, I could definitely see Kamigoroshi slicing down to take my head.
Yumiko?
I glanced up to see Tatsumi still watching me over his shoulder. His face, though not exactly sympathetic, wore a puzzled frown.
"Are you all right?"
he asked.
"Do we need to stop to rest?"
I shook my head, smiling at how genuinely concerned he sounded. "No, Tatsumi-san, I'm fine. I'm just..."
"Oi!"
The faint shout came from the road behind us. I turned and saw a dark, blurry shape hurrying forward, one arm upraised. As it got close, it resolved itself into Okame, huffing and puffing as he jogged toward us.
"Finally! Found you!"
he panted, bracing his hands on his knees. Gasping, he looked up at me with a wry grin.
"Thought you could get rid of me, huh? Didn't Kage-san tell you I was coming with you to the capital?"
I glanced at Tatsumi, who wasn't looking at either of us, his gaze on the distant mountains. "No," I said, frowning. "He didn't mention that."
"Well, lucky for you, I'm a light sleeper."
Okame straightened, adjusting the Yumi bow on his back.
"And that I'd already decided to help you out, because I happen to know you're going the wrong way."
I blinked. "We are?"
"We're not,"
Tatsumi countered.
"This road leads to the Imperial Highway, and from there, straight to the capital itself. We are on the right path." "Yes, if you want to go completely around the mountains,"
Okame said, jerking his head at the mist-shrouded peaks, still cloaked in shadow.
"Which will take days of travel, at least. I know this territory, and more specifically, I know the trails and hidden paths through the mountains."
His thumb rose, pointed back at himself.
"If you follow me, I can get you to the capital much faster than if you keep to the main roads. And we won't have to bother with the Imperial checkpoint at the border."
I couldn't be sure, but I thought Tatsumi perked up at that. Well, maybe perked up was the wrong phrase, but he did seem to take notice. "It would be nice to reach the capital sooner," I mused.
"And just think, Kage-san,"
Okame added.
"The sooner we get to Kinhagen Toshi, the sooner you can get rid of me. Win-win situation, right?"
Tatsumi regarded us in stony silence, then shrugged and turned away.
"It doesn't matter," he said with his back to us, "as long as we reach the capital. And you don't get us lost."
"Good,"
Okame exclaimed, rubbing his hands together.
"Just follow me then. We'll be in Sunlands before you know it."
"Huh,"
Okame mused later that afternoon.
"I was sure there was supposed to be a path here."
We were deep in the mountains now, having left the main road a few hours ago to hike into the wilderness. Okame had quickly found a game trail, and we'd followed him through a dim forest of pine and cedar, over a thick carpet of green moss that covered stones, roots, and fallen logs. He was, I noted, very graceful, despite his self-proclaimed boorishness, moving easily through the woods and brush like he was part of the forest itself. Tatsumi trailed silently at my back, making no sound at all and prompting me to glance over my shoulder every so often, just to make sure he was still there. But when the trail abruptly ended at a small mountain stream, Okame stopped and crossed his arms, gazing down at it like he expected a new path to appear.
"Well, that's strange," he muttered, gazing up and down the stream. "I don't remember this being here."
"You're lost," Tatsumi stated, his voice cold enough to make the creek ice over.
"I am not lost,"
Okame protested, glaring back at him.
"I'm momentarily confused that there is a stream here, but that is a temporary setback. I know exactly where we are."
He scratched the back of his neck, frowning in thought. Across the stream, a small spotted deer stepped daintily from behind a tree and stared at us, twitching large ears.
"We must have missed the side trail,"
Okame mused.
"But if we head north, we should find it. So..." He gazed around the forest, and the deer bounded into the undergrowth.
If that's the position of the sun, and the shadows are going in that direction...
I pointed a finger upstream. North is that way, Okame-san.
Right.
Okame grinned back at me.
Back on track, Yumeko-chan. We'll be in Keenhagen Toshi in no time.
Several hours later, with the sun beginning to set behind the distant peaks and the fireflies starting to wink through the branches, Okame stopped and leaned against a moss-covered boulder, shaking his head.
Okay,
he said cheerfully and raised both hands in a hopeless gesture.
Now we're lost.
Tatsumi's sword rasped free with a chilling screech. Okame instantly sprang off the boulder and darted behind it as I spun, putting myself between the ronin and the demon slayer. Tatsumi, no! I held up my hands as his cold violet gaze slid past me, flat and murderous. Killing him won't help anything. It will rectify the mistake I made earlier, Tatsumi said, his eyes narrowed to purple slits. But it won't help anything now, I insisted. His gaze shifted to me, and my heart pounded under that lethal killer's stare. Kamigoroshi glowed faintly in the shadows, throwing off a sickly luminance that pulsed like a heartbeat. Nothing like the ghastly purple flames I'd seen the night I met Tatsumi, but disquieting all the same. Just being this close to the unsheathed Kamigoroshi made my skin crawl, but I stood my ground. Tatsumi-san, it's done. We're lost. Let's just try to find the way back and get to the capital without bloodshed.
And the fact that he's pointing an arrow at your back means nothing to you? I'm not aiming at her, came Okame's voice behind the rock. I'm pointing it at the guy with a scary glowing sword. If she would take one step to the right, I'd appreciate it.
A cold smile curled one side of Tatsumi's mouth.
You think you're fast enough to shoot me down, Ronin? Well, if the other choice is stand here and smile while you cut me in half, I'll take my chances,
Okame shot back. I spared a split-second glance at the ronin and saw a dangerous smirk stretching his own mouth, his eyes hard and defiant.
I'm no noble. I'm not offering you my head because I made a mistake. You want it, you'll have to take it the old-fashioned way.
No one is taking anyone's head, I argued. That would just be messy and disgusting. Let's just try to find the way out of the mountains. It'll be dark soon and... I paused, pricking my ears forward, though that went unseen by the two humans. Down the slope, in a small bowl between the mountains, I could see a few faint, glimmering lights. Wait a minute. I think there's a village down there. The two humans straightened and turned to peer into the valley as well.
Oh, there it is, Okame said, sounding satisfied. I knew it was around here somewhere.
He ignored Tatsumi's dark glare and loosened the bow, sticking the arrow back in his quiver.
Well, what are we waiting for?
We started down the slope, but it was steep and treacherous, the stones covered in slick moss, forcing you to watch where you put your feet. It was slow going, but I had played this game with the monkeys in the forest and skipped from rock to rock, landing as lightly as I could before continuing on. Okame slipped once, skinning his hands on a boulder and letting loose an impressive string of profanity. Tatsumi, of course, was as graceful as a deer, stepping calmly from boulder to boulder, making it look like he did this every day. By the time we reached the edge of the valley, the sun had set behind the mountain peaks and the shadows had grown long. We crossed a bridge over a tiny stream and followed a winding dirt path toward a cluster of thatched huts scattered in the distance. The air in the valley was thick and humid. Cicadas buzzed in the trees and fireflies blinked over the rice paddies, their lights reflected in the dark, muddy water.
Tiny rice seedlings had been planted in neat rows through each of the terraced fields and would soon grow into a waving sea of green. Along the banks of the slow-moving river, I could see nets hanging in the sun to dry and tiny fishing boats docked along the shore. The sunlight glimmered off the water, and the entire valley had a lazy, isolated feel to it, like it had been forgotten by the rest of the world. Past the rice fields, the winding trail intersected with a larger, wider road cutting straight through the village. A sign had been erected at the crossroads, handmade and hand-painted, kanji scrawled down the board in stark black ink. "You have arrived in Yamatori," the signpost announced. "Travelers always welcome."
"Well, that's friendly," Okame said. "It's a good sign, at least. Some of these little hamlets have a very unfavorable attitude toward visitors. They don't like travelers, they don't like samurai, and they especially don't like ronin."
"Why?" I wondered.
"Because ronin tend to take what they want," Tatsumi answered flatly. "And the farmers can't do anything about it." "Hey, samurai aren't any better," Okame returned, glaring at him. "You think they all follow that code of Bushido nonsense?" He sneered. "I've seen samurai take another man's wife and kill the husband for daring to protest. I've seen one cut off a kid's head for startling his horse. I might be a dirty ronin dog, but at least I don't use the code as an excuse to do whatever the hell I want."
"Whatever I want?" Tatsumi's voice was soft, and he shook his head, almost in pity. "One who has no honor," he stated, "will never understand the actions of those who do."
"Says the man with the creepy glowing sword."
"That has nothing to do with anything."
"Right, because scary glowing swords are always used for the purest intent."
"There are more?" I blinked. "I've only ever seen one scary glowing sword, Okame-san," I said. "Are they very common?" Okame sighed.
"I'm gonna have to teach you about sarcasm, Yumeko-chan, but not right now, because we're being stared at."
I glanced toward the village. Several men and women had gathered in the road, most of them farmers according to their simple tunics and sun-tanned skin, and were peering at us intently. Okame smirked.
"Well, they all know we're here," he said, and began walking toward the crowd. "Guess we should go say hello."
The villagers continued to watch us as we drew close. Most of them smiled and nodded or bowed as we passed, averting their eyes and never looking us in the face. I saw a few men whispering to each other, their faces excited but tense. One white-haired woman sitting in the doorway of her hut beamed toothlessly as we went by, her eyes nearly sinking into the folds of her face. A little girl in a yellow kimono bounced in place and waved to Tatsumi, who was trailing a few paces behind me and Okame. He ignored her, but that didn't deter her enthusiasm. Everyone here seemed excited to see us. And yet...
"Welcome, travelers!"
A man approached us, smiling. His bald forehead was shiny with sweat. Dark strands along the sides of his head pulled into a topknot. His clothes were a little nicer than the rest of the farmers, a blue and gray jacket over black hakama trousers. He walked forward and sank into a bow that bent him forward at the waist.
"Welcome to Yamatori, honored guests," he greeted as he rose. "I am Manzo, the headman of this village. Will you be staying long, or are you just passing through?"
"Just passing through," I answered, and he looked at me in surprise, obviously expecting Okame or Tatsumi to answer the question. "We'll be on our way soon. We don't mean to trouble you,
but if you could spare a room and some beds for the night, we would certainly appreciate it,"
the ronin added, stepping up beside me. He gave the headman a disarming grin and reached into his obi.
"I can pay you for the inconvenience."
Pay? Oh, no, no, no.
The man shook his head vigorously, holding up a hand.
I will not hear of it. You are honored guests in Yamatori. There is no inconvenience. Please, come.
Well, they're certainly a friendly lot,
Okame mused as we followed the headman down the road toward the center of the village. People smiled and nodded as we went by, peeking at us from doorways and between buildings. He waved at a young boy watching us from behind his hut, and the child darted back behind the wall.
Makes you wonder what happened to make them so accommodating of samurai.
I don't like it, Tatsumi said in a low voice. Something seems off.
You mean people being nice to you? Yeah, I can see how that would be unnerving.
The headman led us up a small rise to a larger house at the top. This one had a thatched roof like the others, but a veranda circled the front and wings stretched to either side, unlike the single-room huts the farmers lived in. As we followed the headman, I spotted an old monk in black robes sitting under a tree beside the path, a metal staff resting on his shoulder. He smiled and nodded as we passed, and I paused to offer a quick bow before hurrying after the others. Okame gave me a strange look as I caught up, but didn't say anything. We walked through a bamboo gate and into a small garden, in which a mossy lantern sat beside a tiny pond under the boughs of a pine tree. Remembering the pond in the Silent Winds Temple, I peered into the water, expecting to see a few carp or fat goldfish swim up to me, mouths gaping. Sadly, the pond was empty, the water holding only a few rotting leaves, making me frown in disappointment. But my reflection stared back, a girl with furry ears and eyes glowing yellow in the fading light, and my stomach dropped.
Kitsune,
the headman said, and my heart gave a violent lurch. Stomach roiling, I turned to face the human, who gave a nervous smile.
We've had terrible trouble with foxes lately,
the headman explained, gesturing at the pond.
Always getting into everything. My poor fish had no chance.
Oh, I breathed. I quickly stepped away from the edge, hoping no one else had seen the brief flash of a kitsune in the pond. I'm sorry to hear that. Stupid mistake, Yumeko. Be more careful. This is no time to be playing with fish. The headman slid open the front door, which was heavy and wooden, I noticed, not made of rice paper on a frame.
Asami,
he called as we left our sandals below the lip of the wooden floor before following him into the house.
We have guests. Set three more places for dinner.
You really don't have to do this, I told the headman, as a middle-aged woman in a dark blue kimono appeared in the door and, with a gasp, hurried off again. We have our own supplies. I remembered the tiny farming community at the base of the mountains near the Silent Winds Temple. Sometimes a farmer would show up at the gates of the temple to ask that someone pray over his fields or drive the spirits of evil fortune from his house or family member. The monks had obliged and accepted only meager forms of payment in return, a sack of barley or a few skinny carrots. The people there barely scraped by, Master Isao told me. Farming was a difficult life. Many villages often went hungry, as over half their rice crop went to the Earth Clan Daimyo for taxes each year. I didn't want to take food away from these people if I could help it. But the headman wouldn't hear of it, stating yet again that we were honored guests in Yamatori, and it would be unforgivable to treat us as less. So we sat cross-legged on thick tatami mats with lacquered trays in front of us, as the headman's wife and daughters brought us dish after dish of food. Much of it was simple, hearty fare, pickled cabbage, cooked river eels and miso, dried plums and seemingly unlimited bowls of pure rice without a kernel of millet to bolster it. According to the headman, Some of the farmers made their own sake, which Okame took great pleasure in sampling. Tatsumi and I stuck to tea. But no matter how often I emptied my rice bowl, another would appear, almost by magic. I couldn't keep up with the amount of food, even as Okame gorged himself on everything. Tatsumi ate very little, saying nothing except to politely turn down the offer of more. If it wasn't for the fact that the headman was eating the same dishes as us, I doubted he would have touched any of his food. Finally, when I couldn't eat another kernel, the headman rose from his table, smiling and clasping his hands together.
"You must be tired after such a long journey," he said, glancing out one of the windows where a bloated yellow moon was beginning to peek over the treetops. "If you will follow me, I will show you where you can sleep tonight."
I dragged myself upright, feeling my stomach press against my ribs and stifled a yawn. "You are very generous," I said, earning another strange look from the headman, as if he were again puzzled that I was the one speaking for the group and not the quiet, black-clad samurai behind me. "But we wouldn't want to intrude upon your lovely home."
"It is no trouble, my lady," the headman said. "We have a guest house out back that we keep for this very purpose. It is quiet and isolated from the rest of the village. You won't be disturbed, I assure you."
He gave me a shaky smile as his two daughters hovered outside the door looking in, wide-eyed and fearful.
"Please, follow me."
We left the house via the back door, but on the other side of the bamboo fence, a small crowd had gathered. As we stepped through, a young woman came forward, smiling and holding a bundle of white daikon radishes. With a bow, she thrust the vegetables into my hands and stepped back before I could say anything. Thank you. The words were barely out of my mouth when another villager approached and handed me an entire head of cabbage. Yet a third placed a trio of cucumbers atop the growing pile of vegetables. I grabbed them before they could roll off into the dirt. Both women bowed and quickly backed away, ignoring my protests. I glanced at Okame and found him beset by villagers as well. A white-bearded man put a sake gourd around his neck, grinning, while an old woman, possibly his wife, thrust a reed basket of dried fish into his hands. The headman did nothing to stop or discourage this, and more food was added to the pile with smiles and bows, like they were genuinely happy to be giving away their livelihoods. Tatsumi, I noticed, remained unmolested, probably because you could almost see the hostile aura around him, the do-not-touch-me look in his cold purple eyes. However, when a tiny girl in a ragged kimono tottered up and lifted a slightly squashed persimmon to him, he accepted the gift with a solemn bow of his head, before the girl's mother snatched her away with hasty apologies. By the time we got past the crowd, Okame and I were laden with food, and I was barely able to see past my own offerings. I hope this guest house wasn't far. We followed the headman down a narrow dirt road, passing more fields and storehouses for the rice, heavy wooden buildings sitting on stilts to keep them out of the wet. Around the village, the mountains loomed into the air, black silhouettes against a sky dusted with stars. A nightbird called, a mournful cry in the darkness. Crickets sang from the long grass, and fireflies winked like a miniature galaxy over the fields. It should have felt peaceful out here. So why did I feel so exposed? I glanced over my shoulder and saw that the villagers had disappeared. Except for one. The monk was back, standing like a statue at the side of the road. His black robes blended into the darkness, but his staff and wide-brimmed hat glimmered in the faint light of the moon. Beneath the hat, his face was hidden in shadow, but I could sense he was watching us, and me in particular. I turned back and nearly ran into Okame as both he and the headman had stopped in the middle of the road. With a hasty, "Gomen," I veered away and nearly crashed into Tatsumi, who smoothly stepped aside to avoid the collision and even caught the cucumber that tumbled free of the rest.
"As I was saying,"
the headman gave me a mildly annoyed look and pointed a thick finger down the path.
"You can see the guest house from here. Just keep following the road."
I peered over cabbage leaves and could just make out a squat, isolated house sitting at the edge of the fields. It looked like every other village house we'd seen, with wooden walls and a pointed thatched roof. Soft orange light spilled through the window bars and the open doorway, and I could see the flicker of a fire pit through the frame. The road curved past the hut and continued down a slope until it disappeared from view.
"Everything has been prepared for you," the headman continued, speaking to Okame and ignoring me. "The fire has been lit and fresh bedding has been laid out. There is a stream behind the house if you need water and a cooking pot over the fire pit, should you get hungry in the middle of the night."
I didn't see how that was possible. I didn't even want to think about food until tomorrow morning. But Okame thanked the headman, who gave a somewhat brittle smile and bowed low.
"You honor us with your presence," he said, still staring at the ground. "I hope you have enjoyed your stay in Yamatori. Oyasumi nasai."
"Good night," I repeated, and the headman hurried away, striding back toward the village at a near jog. As his silhouette got smaller and smaller, I noticed that the monk who had been standing beside the path was no longer there.
18. Curses and Gaki. Something was wrong with this village. I felt it, Hakaemono felt it, and I was fairly certain Yumeko felt it as well, though the Ronin seemed oblivious. It wasn't just the air of excitement and fear that hovered around the village like a dense mist, or the way the villagers were almost frantic to give away their food, despite the fact that it wasn't uncommon for farmers to starve during the winter months and rice was more precious than gold to them. Suspicious behavior, though it wasn't unreasonable for the village to overcompensate for our needs, especially if they had been treated poorly by wandering samurai in the past. Our food hadn't been poisoned, at least. Part of my training involved intimate knowledge of the various toxins and what they tasted like, and the meal had been clean. But there were other smaller indicators that made my instincts bristle. The fences around the rice paddies, the bamboo tops sharpened to lethal points, the houses with the heavily fortified doors, the fact that there were no animals of any kind in the village, no dogs, cats, or chickens. Yamatori had a secret. I just didn't know if it was one we should be concerned about. The guest house was empty, and the embers glowing in the fire pit threw long shadows over the bare wooden walls. Yumeko stepped through the doorway, then knelt and dropped the bundle of food in a corner with a sigh. The Ronin followed her example, only he kept the jug of sake, taking a pull before tucking it into his jacket.
"I don't know about you two, but I like this place," he announced, flopping down before the fire pit. "I haven't eaten this well in weeks, and there's plenty more where that came from."
He patted his stomach with a lazy smile.
"We'll be gorging like princes all the way to the capital."
"Baka," I said quietly. "Idiot. This village is hiding something. They weren't feeding us to be kind. We were put here for a purpose." Yumeko looked relieved.
"You felt it too," she said, and I nodded. "It's the strangest thing," she went on, gazing back toward the village. "I got the impression that they wanted us gone, but at the same time, they were desperate for us to stay. Everyone was trying so hard to make us feel welcome, even though they were terrified."
She paused, then glanced back at me, her eyes troubled. You don't think they brought us out here to rob or kill us in our sleep, do you? That would be terribly dishonest.
On the floor, the Ronin snorted, lying on his side and resting his head on a hand.
Farmers are a cowardly lot, he said, as if speaking from personal experience. The only time they'd attempt to cut our throats would be while we slept. But from what I saw, they're too scared even for that.
He yawned, scratching his neck, and glanced out the door.
But we should probably post a watch tonight, just in case.
I went to the door, intending to slide it shut, only to discover there was no door on the tracks. Frowning, I glared out toward the village, noticing that the road snaked around the hut and continued down the slope at the back. Not liking the idea that more of the village could be behind us, I stepped outside and followed the path around the hut until I came to the edge of the rise and could see what lay at the bottom. A field of gravestones, surrounded by a simple bamboo fence, sprawled in half-assed rows in the grass at the bottom of the hill. Crudely hewn headstones jutted out of the dirt, interspersed with stone lanterns and bibbed statues of Jinke, the Kami of Mercy and the Lost. Many of the structures, from the markers to the lanterns to the statues themselves, were covered in moss, their faces worn by erosion and time. But there were several headstones, particularly the ones closest to the hut, that looked much newer. Yumeko appeared beside me, also gazing down into the cemetery. Strange that I could feel her presence, another body close to mine, and not want to step away and put distance between us.
Well, the girl stated after a moment, that's interesting. Is it common to put your honored guests a stone's throw from your graveyard?
Not usually, I muttered. Yumeko continued to observe the field of stones.
Do you think there could be Yure? She asked.
She didn't sound terribly concerned about this, as if the idea of meeting a ghost was more curious than frightening. I was less intrigued. Most Yure were harmless, content to haunt the place they had died, mournful and tragic, but not dangerous. There were others, however, Onryo and Goryo, being the most feared, who had died with hatred or jealousy in their hearts, and would return to wreak vengeance upon those who had wronged them. Sometimes their grudges would last for years, centuries, as the curse affected not only the people who betrayed them, but their descendants as well.
It depends, I told Yumeko, not wanting to explain all this.
On what?
If they were buried appropriately. If they received the proper funeral rites so they could pass on. If they died with no strong emotions or unfinished business that would cause them to linger in the mortal realm. I gazed over the cemetery.
So, yes, it's entirely possible we will see Yude tonight.
At least there's a monk in town, Yumeko said. He would have performed the proper burial rites, wouldn't he?
I frowned slightly and glanced at her.
What monk?
The monk,
Yumeko repeated, gesturing back toward the village.
He was at the headman's house when we first arrived, and then again on the path here. You didn't see him?
No.
Not that I doubted her statement. Like the Kodama and the Kamaitachi, it seemed Yumeko was adept at seeing the spirit world. Better than me, it appeared. I knew how to spot demons and yokai, but that was usually due to Kamigoroshi's influence, Hakaimono's insatiable bloodlust rearing up, alerting me when they were close. Because the demon didn't care much about Yure, I was less sensitive to the presence of ghosts, unless they were very powerful or meant me harm.
There was a monk, Yumeko insisted. He wore black robes, a straw hat, and he carried a staff with metal rings that chimed as he walked.
She paused a moment, looking thoughtful, then asked,
Oh, do you think he could be a Yure who haunts this village, and that's why everyone is acting so strange?
Maybe.
Ghosts were harder to figure out than demons.
Usually, they were problems for a priest or onmyoji to take care of, to exorcise or placate the spirit into moving on. The clan never sent me after Yure. No one was certain what happened to the creatures that Kamigoroshi slew, if they were banished to be reborn or erased from existence entirely. The thought that a human soul could be snuffed out without passing on, to simply cease to exist, was a horrifying and blasphemous idea that even the Kage would not risk. I could kill demons and yokai in waves, but I was forbidden from slaying a ghost unless it was a matter of life or death. Yumeko sighed.
I don't think I'll be getting much sleep tonight.
We turned and walked back into the hut, loud snores greeting us as we stepped through the doorframe. The ronin had already fallen asleep on the rough planks by the fire, the jug of sake clasped loosely in one hand. Yumeko shook her head, stepped over his body, and moved to one of the straw mattresses in the corner. I settled in the doorway, pulling my sword sheath from my belt and laying it across my lap. I could feel Yumeko's eyes on me as she curled up on the mattress and drew a threadbare quilt over her head.
"Tatsumi-san?"
she asked after a few minutes of listening to the ronin snore. Near the fire, the body on the floor coughed and shifted to his back, falling silent for the moment.
"Hmm,"
I grunted.
"I'm glad you're here."
Her eyes, dark and luminous, watched me from under the blanket.
"I know the road is dangerous, but I feel safer knowing you're close. I would never be able to sleep in a haunted village by myself, so thank you for staying."
For some reason, that made my stomach contract a little, and I had no idea why. "We both made a promise," I reminded her. "You would guide me to the Steel Feather Temple, and I would protect you on the way. I'm here for the scroll, nothing else."
"I know."
Her voice was very soft in the darkness of the room.
"But I'm still happy that you chose to stay.
A yawn interrupted her, and she covered it with a hand.
"I might even be able to fall asleep tonight, because I know you're there."
She wrinkled her nose as a snore came from the slumbering ronin near the fire pit.
"If Baka Okame doesn't keep me awake, that is. Good night, Tatsumi-san."
I didn't answer. After a while, her breaths became slow and deep as she drifted into unconsciousness. For a moment, unseen by condemning human eyes, I gave in to my fascination and let myself look at her. Her pale skin seemed to glow in the moonlight slanting through the latticed windows, her hair an inky curtain across her back and shoulders. She breathed calmly, her face unguarded in sleep as it was when she was awake. A jet-black strand of hair came loose to fall into her eyes, and I was filled with an incomprehensible urge to brush it back. Disgust set in, and I turned away, clenching a fist on my leg. Why was I finding myself so distracted lately? I knew my mission. Retrieve the scroll at any cost and return to Lady Hunsho. But here I was, with this girl and now an uncouth ronin, having promised not to leave. For just a moment, I wavered. For a heartbeat, my guard was down, and disgust flared into a burning instant rage. I was suddenly filled with the overwhelming desire to leap up and slay my useless companions, to strike them down while they slept and watch their blood gush over the floor and sizzle in the fire pit. Soundlessly, I rose and stepped into the room, my hand on the hilt of my sword. My shadow fell over the girl, slumbering peacefully on her mattress. It would be easy, I thought, gazing down at the back of her neck, so exposed and vulnerable in the moonlight. Neither of them would realize they were dead until they woke up as Yure or in the next land, and then I would be free to seek the scroll on my own.
I didn't need the girl to find what I was looking for, nor did I need to keep my promises. I was the Kage Demon Slayer and the Shadow Clan's best shinobi. Honor and human lives meant nothing to me. My hand tightened on the hilt of the blade, and I began drawing it from its sheath.
No, Hakaimono, enough!